Accelerate Alaska, exploring the economic opportunities to unlock a greater future.
Hey, did you know that we're having Accelerate Arctic on April 14th at the Anchorage Museum? This is going to be part of the big North by North celebration. We will explore tracks like public-private partnerships, deriving value from our coastline, thriving in a changing climate, and northern tourism opportunities. If you haven't yet, go to accelerateartic.com and get your tickets now.
The energy around entrepreneurship and the energy around new company creation is not the only thing that's important to the health of a city and the health of a community, but I like to suggest that it's a critical component, that in the absence of a vibrant startup community, as a city, you'll stagnate over time.
When Brad Feld moved to Boulder, Colorado back in 1995, there was no tech community. He devoted himself to bring that community together, and now Boulder is a global tech hub. He wrote about his experience and turned it into a blueprint. And now the book, Startup Communities, has been read all around the world and has influenced places like Alaska and Iceland. When he started his accelerator in 2006, there was no blueprint for that either. He invested between $6,000 to $18,000 with a group of 10 entrepreneurs. But what he really focused on was mentorship. A lot of these founders had the passion, but they didn't have the knowledge or the connections to make things work. And now, Techstars, that accelerator, is in over 13 countries, has nurtured over 8,000 founders, and has deployed over $7 billion in investments. And I can't even say that is his biggest accomplishment. I would leave that to 1993 when he married Amy Batchelor, a woman from Fairbanks, Alaska, which is one of the reasons I was able to get him to keynote Accelerate Alaska 2019. We join him on stage.
Howdy. Good to see everyone. I like to time travel as I think about both the past and the future. For a long time, the way I time traveled was I fell asleep on airplanes as I went from one place to another, and I sort of just woke up somewhere else. But I want to time travel with each of you back about a decade and think about what was going on about a decade ago. Anybody remember sort of the global macro event that was happening? A little chuckling, right? The end of the world was nigh economically. We were sort of in the middle of this thing called the global financial crisis. The view was that the way that our economies globally worked would end, that government would have to nationalize sort of all of the financial infrastructure everywhere. There was an enormous thing that nobody really knew how to label at some point became called the Great Recession. And there was incredible stress around the way that commerce worked globally. And if you time travel back a decade from there, anybody remember what was happening around 2000, 2001? There's this thing called the internet that everybody thought was going to be this amazing thing that had this incredible economic run-up and peak, but then had this collapse that was even much more rapid than the run-up and peak. And lots of people said, oh, well, that was cute, but that's not really how the world's going to work in the future. The whole idea of people having computers in their pockets and being able to connect to everything all the time, anywhere, and with a click of a button buy something, that's nonsense. That'll never happen. So it's time travel back to 2010. 2010, I had co-founded a venture firm in 2007 called Foundry Group. In 2006, I'd co-founded Techstars, which was one of the first accelerators and really created the concept of a mentor-driven accelerator. And by 2010, entrepreneurship was starting to sort of bubble around at the tail end of the Great Recession. People were starting to talk about economic progress and the path forward and what that was going to look like. And there was this mantra still that if you were going to create a company, you had to be in Silicon Valley, that if you wanted to do something entrepreneurial, you had to be kind of special and unique. And all of a sudden there was starting to be this cadence of conversation around entrepreneurship. And I remember in 2010, there was an article that came out that talked about the emergence of entrepreneurship as the path forward for economies around the world. The article talked about four cities. One city was actually referred to as the Bay Area, which is not really a city, but a bunch of cities. New York, Boston, and Boulder. And I remember when I saw that article, I'm like, this is a messed up article. Like, there are these three things, and then there's Boulder. Like, Boulder itself fits within a single building in New York City. It's a little tight, it's a little smelly, right? But it's like Whittier. I mean, we could pull it off. Not that hard. Boulder was 100,000 people, and yet it had this sort of recognition of something going on. So I started thinking about this idea that turned into this phrase, startup communities. Before today, how many of you had heard the phrase startup communities? Pretty good branding. A decade ago, the phrase didn't exist. Nobody referred to these things as startup communities. It's one of an author's great pleasure to have the title of a book end up becoming a canonical phrase to describe something. I had no expectation of that when I wrote this book in 2012. The phrases that people had been using, sort of the most accessible phrase, was entrepreneurial ecosystem. But there are phrases like innovation cluster, research concentration, university research, seven other words after it because some academic had come up with it. Alaska, or did Anchorage ever have a Silicon something moniker? Silicon cold? Silicon snow? I remember when Utah branded itself Silicon Slopes. And I thought to myself, that's just awful. Like, that's just not a needed brand in the universe. But New York was Silicon Alley. Santa Monica, not even Los Angeles, but Santa Monica was Silicon Beach. I sort of was looking around again in 2010, 2011, and trying to come up with why this little 100,000 person town of Boulder had this vibrant and developing startup community. And I came up with four principles, which I originally referred to as the four principles, until the editor I had said, you have to come up with something more creative than that. So I called it the Boulder Thesis. The Boulder Thesis is four principles. Some of you may know it, but I'll just state them. The first is that the startup community has to be led by entrepreneurs. And today, this is not that controversial, but in 2012, this was antithetical. It was the notion that there were a whole bunch of things that needed to go on to organize what was happening. And the nature of entrepreneurs, especially at the nascent energy around things, is almost by definition disorganized. It wasn't non-organized, it's just chaotic. And the phenomena of being entrepreneurial-led was one where there wasn't a centralized, top-down, hierarchical control, but instead this idea of a network where lots of different people got together and everybody brought, if I use the metaphor from before, somebody brought a stone and somebody brought a pot and somebody brought some water and somebody brought some spices and all of a sudden everybody was kind of doing whatever and magical soup occurred. So the entrepreneurs had to lead. I made one mistake in the first book when I wrote it, which is I referred to the entrepreneurs as leaders, and I referred to everyone else as feeders. I did that very deliberately because I wanted to separate this notion of leadership and entrepreneurs. Some people interpreted feeders as diminutive or as a one up, one down, where the entrepreneurs were more important than everybody else. I really should have called them apples and papayas, right? Or caribou, and I always get confused between caribou and elk. Amy straightens me out sometimes. I should just call them different things. They're both critically important, but the feeders, which include university and government and nonprofits and investors and service providers like the lawyers and the accountants and big companies as well, all of the feeders are just as important to a startup community as the leaders. But if the entrepreneurs are not providing leadership, the startup community won't develop and grow. That was one big observation from Boulder. The second is that you have to take a very long-term view. And this view, I tried to say indefinite. I ended up, again, having to zone it so it was accessible. And I said at least 20 years. But I tried to make this notion of not just 20 years in an absolute, but 20 years from today. So if you think about my journey in Boulder, Amy and I have lived in Boulder now since 1995. So we've lived there for almost 24 years. So I'm not minus 4 years into my journey. I'm 24 years into a 44-year journey. The goal was always have a long-term view about what you're doing. Instead of looking at what happened today, and this is one of the challenges. Entrepreneurs generally have a very long-term view. Anybody here that's ever created a company from scratch knows that it doesn't happen in 6 months. Oftentimes, it doesn't happen in 15 years. I recently got off the board of a company that I'd been on for 20 years, finally got acquired. It's a $100 million business. It had grown to be a very interesting company, but 20 years later, it had its moment of sort of overnight success. This long-term view was key. It was critical. The third, and go back to the time frame, this is 2012. The third is that you have to be inclusive of anyone who wants to engage in the startup community. And that's a key phrase. I underscore the words inclusive and anyone. Today, sort of the notion of inclusivity, the notion of diversity on multiple dimensions, gender, ethnicity, race, but also if you look at other dimensions, including not just where somebody came from, but what their educational background was, what their socioeconomic background was, what their resources are. Sort of these concepts are ones that are now more front and center in the discussion around entrepreneurship specifically, but I think generally more broadly in the notion of the way that our society is trying to interact. By the way, it's in the front of the conversation, both in good and bad. There's a lot of struggle with this notion today. But in 2012, the statement that I made was, anyone who wants to engage in the startup community at any level should be welcome. And the goal is to get as many people as you can as a startup community engaged with you in whatever way they want, whether they're an aspiring entrepreneur or they're somebody that's moved to town and they're semi-retired because their last three businesses were successful, whether it's someone that has a PhD or somebody that didn't graduate from high school, whether it's male, female, or identifies as something other than male, female. Just the whole dynamic of inclusivity was key. And this ended up being very powerful because the adjacency to inclusivity is the notion that you can do this anywhere in the world, that you don't have to be a certain type of person or a certain place or a certain background to be able to be an entrepreneur and to be able to develop in your community a startup community. The fourth was that you have to have activities and events that allow people in the startup community to continuously engage in entrepreneurship. And this was specifically in response to a thing that I had experienced in the 1990s when I was a young entrepreneur, in the 2000s, both pre-internet bubble and post-internet bubble, was there was this series of events, and some of them were annual events that we had in Boulder, and I also saw them in other places, and I participated in them in other places. And the one that stood out to me the most was the Entrepreneur of the Year event, because it was the point at which somebody got a button that said, I'm the Entrepreneur of the Year. It's more than a button, but you know, they got a gold star. I'm a great entrepreneur. And you'd have this cocktail party, and you'd have this big events, and you'd have these sort of exclusive things. But there was no entrepreneurial activity being practiced. There was no energy around that. It was just sort of giving a reward associated with or acknowledgement of a person. There's nothing wrong with that. That's helpful. But my view was it was insufficient. What you needed was you needed things like startup weekends, which had been something that was created around 2007 was the first startup weekend. It actually happened in Boulder. And it happened sort of adjacent to the first Techstars program. And if you're not familiar with Startup Weekend, there's now 1,000 of them a year all over the world. I'm sure there's probably at least one a year in Anchorage. And the idea of Startup Weekend is it's a 54-hour simulation of entrepreneurship. It's a way to get people together for Friday night through Sunday, sort of put them under the pressure of trying to ideate and create something in a very short period of time. You break up into teams with people that you've never worked with before. And you get this crazy experience that has a lot of the characteristics of being a startup founder. And for a lot of people that go to startup weekends, it's because they're interested in starting something, but they don't know any founders. Or they're interested in joining a startup, but they don't necessarily have a network that they can plug directly into. There's some startup junkies that like to go to startup weekends because it's just a fun way to spend the weekend, the same way that some people like to run marathons on the weekend. that's crazy. Some people think it's fun. It's good either way. These kinds of activities, accelerators like Techstars, continual events that happen, say, on a monthly basis that are different types of entrepreneurial meetups, the goal was to supersaturate the startup community with energy and activity around startups. So if you think about this, again, sort of time travel back a decade and have the pallor and the gloom that was hanging over everybody in that time period, and now you wind forward about to today, and you think about how entrepreneurship has captured the attention globally of so many people and so many different communities. And the energy around entrepreneurship and the energy around new company creation is not the only thing that's important to the health of a city and the health of a community, but I like to suggest that it's a critical component, that in the absence of a vibrant startup community, as a city, you'll stagnate over time. And the energy of that startup community, it's not just the economic success, because anybody who's been involved in entrepreneurship knows that there's a huge amount of failure along the way. As somebody who's been involved now in entrepreneurship for my whole adult life, I've had many more companies that I've been involved with fail than the ones that I've been involved with that have succeeded. Now, the good news for me is that the magnitude of the ones that have succeeded have been greater than the magnitude of the ones that have failed. But the experience is one that's continuous. As an entrepreneur within a company, within a startup community, you have to combine those two. And I like to say that any activity that you do as an entrepreneur, or any entrepreneurial activity, even if it's not to create a company, but it's to create a nonprofit, to create a new event, something like this would be an entrepreneurial activity when it didn't exist before, is a continuous series of experiments that you run. Many of those experiments fail, and when they fail, you stop doing that thing that didn't work. But when the experiment works, you do more of it, and you increase the amount that you do. And that's essentially the creation of something new. It's this continuous series of experiments with many, many things not working, stop. Things that do work, do more. And if you then reflect that back and think about in the context of the community that you're trying to develop, if you go backwards for those four principles and think about the idea first of continuously doing things that generate activity around this, not just talk about it, not just celebrate things. Those are nice, but they're not enough. But actually then engage in doing, that as part of that, you're inclusive of anyone who wants to be involved, and you welcome them in and you let them be involved rather than they have to pass a test or they have to get to a certain level or they have to do a set of things before they can be welcome, or they don't look like everybody else, so we're not sure what to do with them. Just welcome them in. You have to take a very long-term view. So in this room, instead of thinking about 2020 or 2021, it's fine to think about 20 and 2021 as a way to think about 2030 and 2040. Make sure you have that view in mind rather than just 2020 and 2021. As part of that, then, everyone in this room engaging in the process as a leader rather than waiting to be led. I'll end with another thing I missed in that first book, which is when I talked about leaders and feeders, and I talked about the organizations that were feeders, I talked about individuals who were leaders. And really the distinction I was trying to make between the two is that individuals play leadership roles. Organizations have a very difficult time doing that. Organizations try to control and shape the world to look like whatever their organization needs or wants, and whatever the norms of the organizations are, good or bad, but individuals are the ones that actually are creating change. And the miss that I had in that book was the idea that individuals within those organizations and institutions, whether or not they're entrepreneurs, could be playing leadership roles. And so for anyone who's on the entrepreneur side that's trying to figure out how to engage a large institution, or anybody who's on an institution side that wants as an individual to engage, the trick is to focus on the individual people and get engagement and connection from the individual people rather than focusing on trying to change the institution. The institutions will do whatever they're going to do, but the individual people within the institutions are the ones who can actually make change within whatever community you're creating. So It's interesting to time travel back and forth, land in 2019, and think about where we are today. Not just around entrepreneurship, not just around startup communities, but around how to create vibrant cities and how to create vibrant communities within those cities. And I come back to a thing that started in that first book in 2012 that was part of the essence of how Boulder became the place that it has become over a long period of time. It's not by getting conformity to a long-term plan and a mission stated by a set of people who then stayed in control of that long-term plan and mission continuously with it unchanging. In some ways, that it was actually against the friction of that. There's some people in Boulder that have a very clear view of what they think the next 30 or 40 years should look like. And there's some people who have been in Boulder for less than 6 months. And the idea of the collisions between those and the ability for the individuals to engage in lots of different things going on within the community in constructive and collaborative ways rather than in hostile and argumentative ways is very powerful. It actually creates diversity within the community to have lots of different frames of references that are trying to move forward against a collective versus the historical view of there's a boss on top and everybody wants to follow what the boss has to say and the norms of the organizations roll the way down. And yeah, every now and then you've got some subversive people at the bottom or on the sides. If you flatten it all and sort of say, you go back to Ross's statement about the stone, like everybody sort of has a stone. Everybody's a leader. Everybody has a chance to sort of talk about what their special magic thing is that they bring to the community. Instead of building armor against it or reacting to it, welcome the different thoughts and see where they go and try to figure out how to weave them together in a powerful way. Knowing that you can have multiple collections of different thoughts woven together. And that's okay. It doesn't have to be one canonical thing. So thanks for letting me talk some this morning, and thanks for welcoming me.
I hope you enjoyed what you heard. If you want to see the presentation with slides and visuals, go to accelerateak.com. A big thank you to Alaska Communications for sponsoring Bradfield's keynote. If you believe in Alaska's future and you need an internet provider, I urge you to connect with Alaska Communications. Do you enjoy this podcast? If so, go to accelerateak.com to find out how you can contribute, volunteer, or even bring an Accelerate conference to your town. accelerateak.com. This has been an Accelerate LLC production. The future is already here if you know where to look.